Text 1, chapter 18. The Lord has just promised that he was going to appear, and Brahma has just offered some prayers, knowing what was going to happen. Sukadev Goswami said, after Lord Brahma had thus spoken, glorifying the Supreme Lord's activities and prowess, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is never subject to death like an ordinary living being, that means that he is not subjected to birth like an ordinary human being, so he's an extraordinary human being, he's a personality, a person, but not like us. That point must be stressed again and again. He appeared from the womb of Aditi. His four hands were decorated with a conch shell, club, lotus, and disc. He was dressed in yellow garments, and his eyes appeared like the petals of a blossoming lotus. So Prabhupada in his purport speaks on that very point, that Krishna's appearance and disappearance and activities are extraordinary. And if just by knowing of Krishna's activities, then one does not have to see birth and death again. In truth, though, tatvata, what's the verse? Janma karma cha me divyam naitimam na eti naitimam eti sahajana. The body, so now some descriptions of what he looked like. The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. Please look up, who has a dictionary? Look up the exact meaning of inebrieties. His lotus face decorated with earrings, resembling sharks. Of course, it's not exactly a shark, but it's makara. Appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Shivatsa, a white hair representing the goddess of fortune. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt on his waist, a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet, so he was well decorated. So what is
drunkenness, intoxication? Not sure about a specific usage for this word.
Yes.
No illusion. No,
yes. False. Yes. So again, free from, as we were mentioning, the difference between sober and intoxicated. There was no touch of the modes of material nature. No illusion and faults, etc. Is that what you said Prabhupada's technical usage of the word was? No illusion and faults. Okay. An uncommonly beautiful flower garland decorated his bosom, and because the flowers are extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sound, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared, so there is great sweetness in the form of the Lord and everything decorating the Lord. When the Lord appeared wearing the Kastuba gem on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of Prajapati Kasyapa. At that time there was happiness in all directions, in the reservoir of water like the rivers and oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart. The various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space and on the surface of the earth, were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the Brahmins, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. On the day of Shravan Dwadasi, the 12th day of the bright fortnight in the month of Bhadra, when the moon came into the lunar mansion Shravan, at the auspicious moment of Abhijit, the Lord appeared in this universe. So Abhijit is noon, and the nakshatra, that's the lunar mansion of Shravan, the constellation, the configuration of the stars. How many are there? 28? Nakshatras, 28? Considering the Lord's appearance very auspicious, all the stars and planets from the sun to Saturn were munificently charitable. So the astronomical and astrological situations were most favorable. Shravan is an especially favorable. Shravan Rohini and some others are especially auspicious. of the nakshatras. O king, when the Lord appeared on Dwadasi, the 12th day of the moon, the sun was at the meridian, as every learned scholar knows. This Dwadasi is called Bijay. Conch shells, kettle drums, drums, panavas, and anakas vibrated in concert, different musical instruments. The sound of these and various other instruments was tumultuous. Being very pleased, the celestial dancing girls, apsaras, danced in jubilation. The best of the Gandharvas sang songs, and the great sages, demigods, manus, pittas, and fire gods offered prayers to satisfy the Lord. The siddhas, vidyadharas, kimpurushas, kinaras, charanas, yakshas, rakshasas, suparnas, the best of serpents and the followers of all of the demigods all showered flowers on Aditi's residence. So these are beings higher than human beings. The entire house was covered with flowers while glorifying and praising the Lord and dancing. That must have been quite amazing. When Aditi saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had appeared from her own womb, having accepted a transcendental body by his own spiritual potency, she was struck with wonder and was very happy. Upon seeing the child, Prajapati Kasyapa exclaimed, "Jai, Jai," in great happiness and wonder. The Lord appeared in his original form with ornaments and weapons in his hand. Although this ever-existing form is not visible in the material world, he nonetheless appeared in this form. Then, in the presence of his father and mother, he assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmin dwarf, a brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So first he appeared in his forearm form to convince, because if he just first appeared in his two-armed form as Vamandev, then there would be the tendency to think him an ordinary child for even the parents. Maybe you could ask them to be a little more quiet. The word Nata, Prabhupada's purport, is significant. An actor changes dress to play different parts, but is always the same man. Similarly, as described in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms. So remember always that we are getting close to the 10th canto where Krishna is going to come in his Somyam Rupa, his most beautiful form. So if we read this purport, even considering that it's talking about Krishna, that Krishna's form is going to appear. So we're getting used to the sort of evolution of, or rather, that Krishna is appearing in a human-like, or the Lord is appearing in a human-like form over here too, as Vamanadeva. But soon Krishna is going to appear with his full personality manifesting. This is a lila avatar. Vamandeva is a pastime incarnation to perform a specific pastime. But Krishna himself manifests the entirety, the full blossoming person, fully integrated person, the full manifestation of Bhagavan. So this is preparing us, all the other cantos of the Bhagavatam prepare us for Krishna's appearance. So if we can keep in mind that it is also relevant in relationship to Krishna. So the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms, not just this one of Vamandeva, or not just the forearm form. Adoitam achutam anadim anantarupa madhyam purana purusham, the original, he has anantarupa as the original, oldest purusha, person, that is Krishna, has inconceivable forms. He is always present with innumerable incarnations. Ramadi murtishu kala niyama ena tishtan nanavataram akarod bhuvanesha kintu. Nonetheless, although he appears in various incarnations, they are not different from one another. He is the same person with the same potency, the same eternity, and the same spiritual existence, but he can simultaneously assume various forms because he's unlimitedly powerful. When Vamanadeva appeared from the womb of his mother, he appeared in the form of Narayan with four hands, equipped with the necessary symbolic weapons, and then immediately transformed himself into a brahmachari, Vatu. This means that his body is not material. One who thinks that the Supreme Lord assumes a material body is not intelligent. So Prabhupada is making this point because the Mayavadis, this is exactly what they say. They say that ultimately the absolute truth is formless. But when he incarnates, using the word literally incarnate, that's not the proper Sanskrit. The Sanskrit is avatar, one who descends, but incarnate is a Christian word, actually, that means in flesh. God takes a flesh form. There was no other translation that could find. So avatar is the actual word, but when he incarnates, this is what the Mayavadis say, he actually goes within flesh, influenced by the mode of when Brahman, the all-pervading, when it comes to the material world, influenced by the mode of goodness, that is the Lord's incarnation, as the Ishwara, and influenced by the modes of passion, ignorance, that is Jiva. This is Mayavad philosophy. And that the Lord actually is forced to take on a material body. And everything that he does is actually in the material world. Well, Krishna actually never descends to the material world, nor does Vamandev, nor do his, quote, incarnations. Into the material world, they say, even when God comes to the material world, he's forced to have a material body and be under the modes of material nature. And therefore, all his pastimes and activities and his devotional services all within the realm of Maya, and therefore they are called Mayavadis, the followers of the path of Maya, because that is their belief. And ultimately, they say the Supreme Lord is impersonal. And of course, the less intelligent people, we need these personal forms just to give us some concept while we're... That's like when a child is very young, he asks his parents where he came from. I don't know what they say en France, but in the United States they say, the stork brought you. Okay, you can believe, or there's Santa Claus. That's how the presents, he came down the chimney in the middle of the night, and he brought the presents. Okay, later on you'll actually understand it wasn't the stork, it wasn't Santa Claus. So actually, this is what they think. Okay, when you're immature, you worship the deity form. When you're immature, you conceive of the person who is God, but ultimately you will find out that you are that Tattvamasi. Aham Brahmasmi refers to the Lord, and Tattvamasi, you are that, you are none different, you are that one substance all-pervading everything, you are him, or that rather. So we don't like the Mayavad philosophy because it ruins any chance of devotion, of true devotion. It is like climbing, using devotion, and they will perform so-called bhakti, Mayavadis even, using devotion as a ladder, and then when you get to the top of the wall and you want to go to the other side, what do you do with the ladder? Kick. You just kick it over. We don't need this anymore. I want to become the deity. Before I was worshipping the deity, but actually I want to become the deity. I'm serving you, my dear boss in the factory. I'm doing everything properly, just what you say. But my concept is to become the boss. take over your position, something like become one with you. So that's not, that type of ambition is not appreciated. So he assumed the form of Vamana. He accepted that mood is exactly what that means. A Brahmana dwarf, a brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Here is Prabhupada's purport. The word nata, nataha, is significant. An actor changes dress to play different parts, but is always the same man. Similarly, as described in the Brahma Samhita, the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms. Adoitam, Achutam, Anadyam, Anantarupam, Adyam, Purana, Purusha. He is always present with innumerable incarnations. Ramadi, Murtishu, Kalani, Aminatishtan, Nanavataramakarod, Bhuvanesha, Kintu. Nonetheless, although he appears in various incarnations, they are not different from one another. He is the same person with the same potency, the same eternity, and the same spiritual existence, but he can simultaneously assume various forms. When Vamandeva appeared from the womb of his mother, he appeared in the form of Narayan, with four hands equipped with the necessary symbolic weapons, and then immediately transformed himself into a brahmachari, Vatu. This means that his body is not material, because he did that transformation. One who thinks that the Supreme Lord assumes a material body is not intelligent. That's why I went on that tangent about the Mayavadi, because that's what they think. The Lord assumes a material body, either influenced by goodness and becomes Ishwara, the Lord, or Jiva, influenced by passion and ignorance. He has to learn more about such a person is not intelligent. He has to learn more about the Lord's position. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma chame dibhyam evam yo vati tatvata. One has to understand the transcendental appearance of the Lord in his original transcendental body, Satchitananda Vigraha. When the great sages saw the Lord as the brahmachari dwarf Vaman, they were certainly very pleased. Thus they placed before them Kasyapa Muni, the Prajapati, and performed all the ritualistic ceremonies such as the birthday ceremony, all the different sanskara ceremonies to make his appearance as a child auspicious. At the sacred thread ceremony, so the birthday ceremony and the sacred thread ceremony, which is another sanskara, the sun god personally uttered the Gayatri mantra. Brihaspati offered the sacred thread. Kasyapa Muni offered a straw belt. Mother Earth gave him a deer skin, and the demigod of the moon, who was the king of the forest, gave him a Brahmadanda, the rod of a brahmachari. His mother Aditi gave him cloth for underwear, kopins, and the deity presiding over the heavenly kingdom offered him an umbrella. O King, Lord Brahma offered a water pot to the inexhaustible Supreme Personality of Godhead. The seven sages offered him kusa grass, and Mother Saraswati gave him a string of rudraksha beads, which are especially dear to Lord Shiva. When Vamanadev had thus been given the sacred thread, Kuvera, the king of the yakshas, gave him a pot for begging alms. He's in charge of wealth. And Mother Bhagavati, the wife of Lord Shiva, and most chaste mother of the entire universe, gave him his first alms. Having thus been welcomed by everyone, Lord Vamanadev, the best of the brahmacharis, exhibited his Brahman effulgence. Thus, he surpassed in beauty that entire assembly, which was filled with great saintly brahmanas. He began to display his charisma, his power. To some degree, he has unlimited power, regardless of what form he is in. It possesses unlimited power, potency, inconceivably unlimited power and potency. And Brahman being one of the aspects of that. After Lord, so it's not that the Brahman displayed a Vamandev, but Vamandev displayed this effulgence. The light of the Lord. How do you say that in Hebrew again? The light of
Lord. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Light, light, the God.
After Lord Sivamandev set a sacrificial fire, He offered worship and performed a fire sacrifice on the sacrificial field. When the Lord heard that Bali Maharaj was performing an Ashwamedha sacrifices, he wanted to perform 100 to be able to maintain his piety, his position, and Indra also had performed 100. Under the patronage of brahmanas belonging to the Bhrigu dynasty, the Supreme Lord, who is full in every respect, proceeded there to show his mercy to Bali Maharaj. By his weight, he pushed down the earth with every step. So he's unlimitedly powerful, regardless of the form that he happens to be displaying. We can't say has accepted that form in the sense of, and then he leaves it and it dies and he accepts another form. But again, the form is manifests a mood. So he's so powerful, and he's going to go to the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj at a specific time when charity is given, and he's going there, in fact, not to beg, as he's going to do, but he's going to give mercy to Bali Maharaj. While engaged in performing the sacrifice, now the scene is he's been inaugurated or initiated and benedicted or given service by the different demigods. And now the mission of his incarnation is starting to be accomplished. He's starting to walk, even though he's a dwarf, diminutive in size, still he's unlimitedly powerful. And his walking pushes down the earth with every step. It trembles practically. So now the scene changes for him walking to the sacrificial arena, and we'll see him approaching from that point of view. While engaged in performing the sacrifice in the field known as Bhrigu Kacha on the northern bank of the Narmada River, the Brahminical priests, the descendants of Bhrigu, saw Vamandev to be like the sun rising nearby. So first they saw the effulgence of Vamandev approaching. O king, because of Vamandev's bright effulgence, the priests, along with Bali Maharaj and all the members of the assembly, were robbed of their splendor. Just like if you could take a candle. I'm sorry. I was just... He can, but he has to sit outside. He's welcome outside. There was somewhere recently, there was some article, and they put it in BTG, I think, about a bull who came in, and he was listening. Year after year, he would come to the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatams and stay for a week or something like that. So just like if you take a candle in a dark room, a candle appears very bright, but then when you take it out in the sun, it appears to lose its effulgence, but obviously it doesn't lose anything, but it's comparative. Compared to the darkness, it's bright, but compared to the sun, it's insignificant. Or like a glowworm at night appears to give off some light, but in the day, invisible, practically speaking. So by his effulgence, everyone else who also had potency appeared insignificant. So the priests, along with Bali Maharaj and all the members of the assembly, were robbed of their splendor. Thus they began to ask one another whether the sun god, by this explanation, how brilliant was his effulgence, whether the sun god himself, Sanat Kumar, or the fire god had personally come to see the sacrificial ceremony. While the priests of the Bhrigu dynasty and their disciples talked and argued in various ways, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadev, holding in his hand the rod, the umbrella, and the water pot full of water, entered the arena of the Ashwamedha sacrifice. Appearing as a Brahmin boy wearing a belt of straw. Who gave him the belt of straw? Does anyone remember?
King
Kashyapa Muni, his father. An upper garment, a sacred thread, an upper garment of deerskin and matted locks of hair, Lord Vamandev entered the arena of sacrifice. His brilliant effulgence diminished the brilliance of all the priests and their disciples, who thus stood from their seats and welcomed the Lord properly by offering obeisances. Naturally, they understood by his effulgence, they naturally understood that this person who has come is extraordinary. How extraordinary, they did not know yet. Bale Maharaj, jubilant at seeing Lord Vamandev, whose beautiful limbs contributed equally to the beauty of his entire body, offered him a seat with great satisfaction, thus offering a proper reception to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is how to greet a respectable person. Everyone stands up and then he comes in, please have a seat. And then then there are other elements in the reception. Thus offering a proper reception to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was always beautiful to the liberated souls. Bale Maharaj worshipped him by washing his lotus feet. Lord Shiva, the best of demigods, who carries on his forehead the emblem of the moon, receives on his head with great devotion the Ganges water emanating from the toe of Vishnu. Being aware of religious principles, Bale Maharaj knew this. So the water that washes the Lord's feet, as happened actually later in this pastime, when Vamandev pierces the universe, the Ganga comes, descends to this world, and Lord Shiva catches it upon his head, and we'll hear this later. In other words, Lord Shiva respectfully takes the water that has washed the lotus feet on his head. So Vamandev, after having his feet washed by Bale Maharaj, Bale Maharaj understood this principle, and he took that water and placed it upon his head. So Bale Maharaj also later became a Mahajan. A Mahajan follows other Mahajanas. And by following the parampara system of Mahajan activities, one can become advanced in spiritual consciousness. The water of the Ganges is sanctified because it emanates from the toe of Lord Vishnu. Bale Maharaj washed the lotus feet of Vamandev, and the water with which he did so became equal to the Ganges. Bale Maharaj, who perfectly knew all religious principles, therefore took that water on his head, following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva. Has anyone been to Jaipur and seen that huge silver, container? It's like a huge pot with a lid, where, because the water of the Ganga, the Ganges water, because it is special, it is not ordinary, even though people may think that this is just, Hindus, they think mockingly they'll say that it removes sins. But it is special. And therefore, the king of Jaipur, when he traveled to England before the days of aeroplanes, and he was going to stay there for months, he did not want to, first of all, he was going by boat. So it takes months and months, several months to go by boat. So he wanted to have proper water to drink that would not become polluted or contaminated. So he took the Ganga water, and it stays miraculously, it stays fresh. That algae, etc., doesn't, even if it's in a closed container, it doesn't become contaminated like other water does. It's quite amazing.
And there it is.
And there it is. There's the pot. There it is. There's a second one too. Yeah, it's huge. It's, how big is it? About this big? It's made out of. How big is it? About this big? Yes. The three of you. You, Subal, in the pot. He took the photo though.
See him in the reflection.
The
most particle.
Yeah, that's what kings do. They can do whatever they want. But it is special. Has anyone ever bathed in Gomukh? Yes, it's cold, isn't it? Yeah, it's so cold you don't know whether it's hot or cold. So then, Bali Maharaj then said to Lord Vamandev. So he honored that water, the Ganga water that had washed the lotus feet of Vamanadev. He said, Bali Maharaj said, O Brahmana, I offer you my hearty welcome and my respectful obeisances. Hearty welcome means sincere from the heart. Please let us know what we may do for you. We think of you as the personified austerity of the great Brahmana sages. Because he was so effulgent, they understood that he was extremely special and that he had performed austerities. Oh my Lord, because you have kindly arrived at our home, all my forefathers are satisfied. Our family and entire dynasty have been sanctified, and the sacrifice we are performing is now complete because of your presence. O son of a Brahmana, today the fire of sacrifice is ablaze according to the injunctions of the Shastra, and I have been freed from all the sinful reactions of my life by the water that has washed your lotus feet. O my Lord, by the touch of your small lotus feet, the entire surface of the world has been sanctified. So this is actually the power of a sage, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, son, because all the rituals, because he's performing a Karmakandya type of ritual, a Vedic sacrifice, which is meant to elevate one on the material level. So the purpose of all of that ultimately, after many, 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 many steps, is to be in the presence of the Lord. So as an intermediary step, as one's piety and fortune and knowledge increases, then the significant intermediary step is coming in contact with a devotee. So therefore he says, or a great soul. So he says, not at this point, even though he seems to be aware, but he's not aware that this is the Lord himself. But at this point he's thinking that the sacrifice is already successful because you're here. The purpose of the sacrifice, which is ultimately association, this is the fruit of all piety, to associate with exalted personalities, because the benefit of associating with an exalted personality is from their heart comes spiritual benefit for the person, comes bhakti ultimately. So he continues, O son of a Brahmana, it appears you have come here to ask me for something. He appeared at the time of the sacrifice when charity is given. Therefore, whatever you want, you may take from me. O best of those who are worshipable, you may take from me a cow, gold, a furnished house, palatable food and drink, the daughter of a Brahmana for your wife, because you're a brahmachari, prosperous villages, horses, elephants, chariots, or whatever you desire. So that ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the eighth canto, 18th chapter, Lord Vamandev, the dwarf incarnation. Now, what is Vamanadev going to reply?
The daughter of Brahmana is with a cow, with a running cow, and another thing.
I'm sorry.
It's interesting that the daughter.
In other words, a wife.
Yes. It's like other things, the cow, the house, the wife, and so.
But not in the sense that the daughter of a Brahmin is an object like other things, but in the sense like other things, these are things that you need. You need to get married. You need a house. You need some income. If you need horses and elephants. Nowadays we don't need chariots and horses and elephants. Take some gold, so you have some wealth. So whatever you want, I'll give you. Because this would happen. This is how also a marriage was thought of in those days, is that I give my daughter, who is so dear to me, I give her in charity to a responsible and suitable recipient. So that's how marriages were seen. They were arranged, like in the old culture. So many old cultures, they were arranged. And it was considered charity in the Western culture. The man or the boy, he goes to the father and asks, "May I have your daughter?" Is it like that in Russia too? For my wife. He asks, he begs. And this is just the opposite of the Vedic culture. A gift in charity. Sukadev Goswami continued. So he's asked him, "What do you want? Whatever it is, I will give you." When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadev, heard Bali Maharaj speaking in this pleasing way, so respectfully, heartily, with affection, he was very satisfied, for Bali Maharaj had spoken in terms of religious principles. Thus the Lord began to praise him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O King, you are indeed exalted." This is the beginning of his reply to Bali Maharaj. And again, the request of Bali Maharaj was, "You please take something in charity." And this is how Lord Vamandev replied. "O King, you are indeed exalted because your present advisors are the Brahmanas who are descendants of Bhrigu, and because your instructor for your future life is your grandfather, the peaceful and venerable Prahlad Maharaj. Your statements are very true, and they completely agree with religious etiquette. They are in keeping with the behavior of your family, and they enhance your reputation," because he was born in the family of Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was. Although it was a demonic, asuric family, as a one sandalwood tree makes an entire forest fragrant, the presence of Prahlad Maharaj makes the entire genealogical family of Diti glorious. So he's going to flatter Bali Maharaj, because Bali Maharaj has said again, in the last words he said, "I will give you these elephants, horses, etc., or whatever you desire." And he wants to fix Bali Maharaj in, "I will give you whatever you want." Because Vamandev, in his plan, wants to take everything for him. Not a horse, not a wife, not a village, not a chariot. He wants everything. Because his purpose on one level is to restore the heavenly kingdom to the demigods. On another level, he wants to take everything from him because he wants Bali Maharaj to give himself to him and fully surrender, which is the essence of bhakti. So here is Prabhupada's purport. Prahlad Maharaj is a vivid example of a pure devotee. Someone may argue that since Prahlad Maharaj, even though very old, was attached to his family and specifically to his grandson Bali Maharaj, how could he be an ideal example? Therefore, this verse uses the word prashanta. A devotee is always sober or satisfied. He is never disturbed by any conditions. Even if a devotee remains in grihastha life and does not renounce material possessions, he should still be understood to be prashanta, sober, because of his pure devotion to the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore said, "Kiva vipra kiva nyasi sudrakena na ye krishna tatpaveta e guruhai." Whether one is a brahmana, sannyasi, or a sudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. Anyone completely aware of the science of Krishna, regardless of his status in life, is a guru. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj is a guru in all circumstances. Here, His Lordship Vamanadev also teaches sannyasis and brahmacharis that one should not ask for more than necessary. He wanted only 3 paces of land, and this is what he's going to ask for. Although Bali Maharaj wanted to give him anything he wanted. Continuing, text 3. I know that even until now, even until the present, no one taking birth in your family has been poor-minded or miserly. No one has refused to give charity to brahmanas. Nor, after promising to give charity, has anyone failed to fulfill his promise. And therein, in that sloka, is very important. That verse is very important because we'll need to remember this later on, that he wants Bali Maharaj. Lord Vamandev will test Bali Maharaj to make sure that he keeps his promise of charity. I will give you whatever you want, and whatever I have agreed to. So he's setting him up in a sense for this point. O King Bali, never in your dynasty has the low-minded king been born who, upon being requested, has refused charity to brahmanas in holy places or a fight to kshatriyas on a battlefield. And your dynasty is even more glorious due to the presence of Prahlad Maharaj, who is like the beautiful moon in the sky, because a kshatriya, a warrior, has to have a very charitable disposition, chivalrous and charitable. If he says, and honest, keeping to his word, if he says, I will give you this in charity, he will give it in charity. He has to have that spirit to actually be a ruler. If he says, I will protect you, he will protect you, even if it means losing his own life. This type of determination, this spirit, is required for one to be able to rule properly. It takes that type of bravado. It's a type of character, nature. So he's inflaming that because he wants, Vamandev has his own plan. It was in your dynasty, now he's going to give an example, that Hiranyakashipu was born. Excuse me, yes. That Hiranyaksha was born. So he's killed him when he took the form of Lord Bor. Carrying only his own club, he was so chivalrous. He possessed this warrior's mood, this Hiranya, just like you do. Carrying his own club, he wandered the entire globe alone, without assistance, to conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him. When delivering the earth from the Garbhadak Sea, Lord Vishnu in his incarnation as a boar killed Hiranyaksha, who had appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. And later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed. So how glorious is your forefather, Hiranyaksha? He was so glorious that the Lord, when he killed him, accepted his eminence as a warrior. So on one hand, he's glorifying him, but really he's criticizing him, because he was fighting with God, Vishnu. When Hiranyakashipu heard the news of his brothers being killed, with great anger he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Vishnu. Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward, bearing a trident in his hand, like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics and the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows. He thought, wheresoever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me, as death follows all living entities. Therefore it is better for me to enter the core of his heart, for then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me. Lord Vamandev continued, O king of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy, Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body, inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril, along with his breath. Upon seeing that the residence of Lord Vishnu was vacant, Hiranyakashipu began searching for Lord Vishnu everywhere. Angry at not seeing him, Hiranyakashipu screamed loudly and searched the entire universe because he wanted revenge, including the surface of the earth, the higher planetary systems, all directions, and all the caves and oceans. But Hiranyakashipu, the greatest hero, did not see Vishnu anywhere. So he, because he was an atheist, Hiranyakashipu, he thought Lord Vishnu dead. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that what to speak of Vishnu being able to die, even an ordinary jiva, a soul, cannot die. He's eternal. But he was an atheist. Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted. He was so determined, this Hiranyakashipu, he's glorifying the members of his dynasty, of Bali Maharaja's dynasty. So your forefather was so great and so determined, his anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until his death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. Here's Prabhupada's short purport to this verse. Generally speaking, even though the conditioned soul is angry, his anger is not perpetual but temporary. It comes and it goes. It is due to the influence of ignorance. Hiranyakashipu, however, maintained his enmity and his anger against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. He never forgot his vengeful attitude towards Vishnu for having killed his brother, Hiranyaka. Others in the bodily concept of life are angry at their enemies, but not at Lord Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, whoever was everlastingly angry, he was angry not only because of false prestige, but also because of his continuous enmity towards Vishnu. He had a competitor in Vishnu, he thought, and that was partially the cause of his enmity. So he's glorifying him to the members of Prahlad's dynasty, but actually criticizing their enmity with the Lord. And here he is, the Lord himself, standing before him. Now next, Balimaraja's own father, Virochana. Your father, Virochana, the son of Prahlad Maharaj, was very affectionate towards Brahmanas. Although he knew very well it was the demigods who had come to him in the dress of a Brahmana, at their request he delivered to them the duration of his life. You also have observed the principles followed by great personalities who are household of Brahmanas, by your forefathers and by great heroes who are extremely famous for their exalted activities. So he's setting forward a high standard of charity, of character, of nobility. O king of the Daityas, descendants of Daity. Yes. 16. O king of the Daityas, from your majesty, because he's asked him, what do you want in charity for me? I'll give you whatever you want. So Vamandev has replied, I very much appreciate your offer because the members of your dynasty are great givers of charity. And once having said to someone, I will give you whatever you want, they never back down. Their character is so strong. Their charity is complete. Even Virochana, O Bali, your own father, he gave charity to the point of giving the remainder of his life. Even though the demigods came to him disguised as Brahmanas, still because they were disguised as Brahmanas in that form, he gave them what they wanted, even though it meant giving up his own life. They had such strong... This is what character means. This is what integrity means. It means being true to one's principles. So it is good to be true to one's principles. Yes, yes, it must be. So he's enlarging this part of Balimraj, because he wants to take everything from him using this. So what do you want? Text 16. O king of the Daityas, from your majesty, who comes from such a noble family, and who are able to give charity munificently, so generously, this is what I want. I ask only 3 paces of land to the measurement of my steps. Not just 3 paces of land according to anyone's steps. But don't worry about a thing. I am diminutive in size. I'm just a dwarf. I'm small, a 7-foot person. He can take great, great steps. But me, don't worry. This is all I want, but it's to the measurement of my steps. O king, controller of the entire universe, although you are very munificent and are able to give me as much land as I want, I do not want anything from you that is unnecessary. If a learned Brahmana takes charity from others only according to his needs, he does not become entangled in sinful activities. So as Prabhupada said earlier, this is a lesson also for those who beg. One should not take more than one needs and try to accumulate. Here's Prabhupada's purport. And then Bali Maharaj is going to begin his reply. A Brahmin or sannyasi is qualified to ask charity from others. But if he takes more than necessary, he is punishable. No one can use more of the Supreme Lord's property than necessary. Lord Vamandev indirectly indicated to Bali Maharaj that he was occupying more land than he needed. In the material world, all distresses are due to extravagance. One acquires money extravagantly and also spends it extravagantly. In other words, not taking more than one needs for one's life, to maintain body and soul together, and thinking that is advancement. And this is what contemporary civilizations are basing their lives on, to accumulate as much wealth as possible and then to spend as much wealth as possible for sense enjoyment, for pleasure, petty material enjoyment. So be extravagant in what one accumulates and then enjoy with it. Be extravagant in what one spends. Such activities are sinful, Prabhupada says. All property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And all living beings who are sons of the Supreme Lord have the right to use the Supreme Father's property, but one cannot take more than necessary. So the Isopanishad speaks about this point quite extensively. This principle should especially be followed by brahmanas and sannyasis who live at the cost of others. Thus Vamandev was an ideal beggar, for he asked only for 3 paces of land. So Prabhupada is explaining the point on a specific level, not to do with the particular pastime here. Of course, there is a difference between his footsteps, and those of ordinary human beings. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable prowess, can occupy the entire universe, including the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems, by the unlimited measurement of his footsteps. And that's just what's going to happen. So Bali Maharaj begins to reply, I'll give you whatever you want. I don't want much. Oh, great member of a noble family who always fulfills their word in giving charity. I don't want much. But we know that you will keep up the noble tradition of your family because it is so noble. But still, all I'm asking for is, by the measurement of my own steps, 3 only paces of land. Bali Maharaj replied to that, O son of a Brahmana, Your instructions are as good as those of learned and elderly persons. You're just a boy, though, but still you're speaking so wisely. Nonetheless, you are a boy, and your intelligence is insufficient. Thus, you are not very prudent. You are not wise in regard to your self-interest, because you're asking for so little. Don't you understand that I rule the entire universe? It is just like what we were speaking of before, going to a rich man, the most wealthy person, and asking for 10 rupees. Foolish. That's what Bali Maharaj is saying. Don't you understand who I am? And what Vamadeva is thinking, I do, but you don't understand who I am. That's what's going to happen. So Prabhupada's short purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being full in Himself, actually has nothing to want for His self-interest. Lord Vamadeva, therefore, has not gone to Bali Maharaj for His own self-interest. He's not gone for begging. He's actually gone to give Him mercy. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. The Lord is the proprietor of all planets in both the material and spiritual worlds. Why should He be in want of land? Bali Maharaj rightly said that Lord Vamadeva was not at all prudent in regard to His own personal interest. Lord Vamadeva had approached Bali not for His own personal welfare, but for the welfare of His devotees. Devotees sacrifice all personal interest to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And similarly, the Supreme Lord, although having no personal interest, can do anything for the interests of His devotees. One who is in His full in Himself has no personal interests. So Bali continues, very sweet purport about the relationship between the Lord and His devotees. So Bali says, I'm able to give you an entire island because I am the proprietor of the three divisions of the universe, upper, lower, middle planetary systems. It's all mine. You have come to take something from me and have pleased me by your sweet words, but you are asking only 3 paces of land. Therefore, you are not very intelligent. Oh, small boy. One who approaches me to beg something should not have to ask anything more anywhere. Therefore, if you wish, you may ask from me as much land as will suffice to maintain you according to your needs. You can take anything you want, and you're asking for 3 paces of land? And then the Lord replied, Oh, my dear king, even the entirety of whatever there may be within the three worlds to satisfy one's senses. Even the entirety of whatever there may be within the three worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. So he's going to speak very cleverly, true, completely true. I'd like to actually read to the end, because his words are so true, instructive, and cute at the same time when you consider what he's planning. So he says, the whole world cannot satisfy one, practically speaking, if one's mind and senses are raging with desires. Krishna himself explains this in the Bhagavad Gita when he compares lust to like fire. How much fuel, how much wood does it take to put on fire? So the fire says, thank you very, very much, I've had enough. No, it can burn the entire world and its capacity to consume will just grow. So it's like that with lusty desires. This is what he said. So if one has uncontrolled senses, even if one possesses the sense objects of the universe, one will remain unsatisfied. So he says in text 22, if I were not satisfied with 3 paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of the 7 islands consisting of 9 vashas or parts. Even if I possessed 1 island, I would hope to get others. And we see this in the world. No matter how much land one has, one is not satisfied and wants more. Wealth, land, everything. We have heard that although powerful kings like Maharaj Prithu and Maharaj Gaya achieved proprietorship over the seven dweepas, the seven islands, what to speak of one, they could not achieve satisfaction or find the end of their ambitions. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny. For discontent can never bring happiness. Very wise, practical words, in fact. It is not that increasing one's capacity to exploit the material energy and consume the material energy will bring us satisfaction and happiness. Rather, contrarily, the more we desire, the more we try to satisfy our desires, the list of our desires multiplies. Discontent, dissatisfaction with what one has can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy even with possessing the three worlds. If I'm not happy with what I have, I'm not going to be happy with what I don't have, even if it's everything. Material existence causes discontent in regard to fulfilling one's lusty desires and achieving more and more money. This, of course, is the definition. What he's talking about is the mode of passion. Passion, desires, therefore, rather than causing happiness, the Bhagavad Gita describes, causes what?
Distress.
Do you know the Sanskrit of that? Desires cause distress. The attempt to fulfill one's desires causes distress. Therefore, the prescription that we've been given is simple living, but high thinking. Material existence causes discontent and satisfaction with whatever one has. This is, I've read recently, maybe it's in one of the purports actually, yes. Well, Prabhupada actually says that the Krishna consciousness movement has come to specifically spread this principle that people should be happy with what they have, not thinking that only if, the only if syndrome, only if I had this, then I'd be happy. Because it never works like that on the material level. It simply does not work. When I get if I get the object of that, then what happens is my desires shift to something else. This is the very nature of the mind. And therefore all the advertising that fills our consciousness with so many desires, and which is the way of contemporary civilization, the filling of the thoughts with desires, it causes so much distress. So much distress, so much war, so much discontent and dissatisfaction, so much protesting, so much killing, so much crime, so much intoxication. Because happiness is being conceived of as being born from passion. Well, what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that content and satisfaction is born of goodness. This is the specific quality of goodness that it brings a contentment and happiness. But who thinks like this? Let me just, whatever I have. There's that famous story that Prabhupada told of some Brahmana who used to teach. He had his own school. He was in, I think it was in Krishnanagar. And he was learned, he was brilliant, he was simple, he was pure. And he just taught. And how did he live? By whatever the students brought him in charity. Whatever it was, he was satisfied with it. So a king found out about this pure soul and went to him and said, you're living in such poverty. He saw his living place, his clothing, the storeroom empty. And he said, you, such a person like you shouldn't have to live in this type of poverty. What do you want? I'll get it for you. And he said, nothing. I don't need anything. It's all right. students, they come, they bring me some rice every day, a little bit of rice, and I have a imli tree, a tamarind tree, and I take a few leaves of that and of the little fruits of that, and I boil it with the rice, and I take it. I'm okay. I don't need anything. Thank you. A completely different concept cannot be imitated by us, but it is actually a way of satisfaction. Rather than dreaming only if then I'd be happy, just whatever you have, be grateful for. Even in contemporary New Agey type of culture, they say that. They call it the attitude of gratitude. You've heard that one? Yes? Quite famous. The attitude of be thankful for what you have, rather than being disgruntled and discontent for what you don't have. If you're happy with what you have, you're happy. And you will be happy. And if you're not happy with what you have, as Vamana Deva was saying, you're not going to be happy with whatever you have. Whatever it is that you have. There was someone, his father's name is one of the donators, one of the contributors in the building of Krishna Balaram Temple. That years ago, the Gurukula students went to his house, a very wealthy man in Bombay, and he had something like more than 80 Rolls Royces. Huh? Yes, but I didn't want to say his name either. Don't worry, it didn't get said. He had so many Rolls Royces. You've been to his house? Very nice, so pious, yes? Now, still? Yeah, but... So, just how many Rolls Royces will it take to satisfy your desire for Rolls Royces? 1, 2, 5, 10, 50, 80, 105, 20, 236? And that famous story of Imelda Marcos, who was the Ferdinand Marcos, the dictator of the Philippines many years ago, when they were kicked out of office, she had several thousands of pairs of shoes.
That was his wife.
Yeah, Imelda Marcos, yes. But only 2 feet, and how many, you know, just imagine if you would change your shoes every like 7 seconds, you know, how many does it take to satisfy you? So we can laugh at how silly they are. But I have my how many are, you know, how many of these I need before I'm happy, and how big my hard drive has to be, and how many books or something like that, you know. They appear foolish, but actually I have the same disease. It's called the mode of passion. So therefore the point that Vamadeva is making is appropriate and applicable, but he's using it to trick ultimately. But still it's truth. So he says material existence causes discontent, not content. We think, and this again is what contemporary civilization is pushing on people. Consume, 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 consume until you're doomed. And the more you consume, the less satisfied you are. And people don't know this. Such a simple, basic point. It's how to live material life. It's not even spiritual life. But people don't know that. And shouldn't say we, but product of this type of civilization, this type of thinking is very hard to give up. How much, and achieving more and more money, how much money would it take before you feel secure? How much do you need to have before you feel that I have enough money and secure? Never happen. This is the cause for the continuation of material life, which is full of repeated birth and death. But Vamadeva says, one who is satisfied by that which is obtained by destiny is fit for liberation from this material existence, because that brings one to the mode of goodness. And one in the mode of goodness in the material world can get beyond the material world because he's peaceful and set from samjayate jnanam, because he has knowledge. Knowledge easily, he's at the doorway of knowledge. And he has knowledge that he's eternal. A Brahman who is satisfied, this is 26, and then we'll read 27 and then go back and read those two purports. A Brahman who is satisfied with whatever is providentially obtained is increasingly enlightened with spiritual power. But the spiritual potency of a dissatisfied Brahmana decreases as fire diminishes in potency when water is sprinkled upon it. Therefore, O King, from you, the best of those who give charity, whose words of offering of charity never go unfulfilled or in vain, who always fulfills his promise. I ask only 3 paces of land. By such a gift, I shall be very pleased, for the way of happiness is to be fully satisfied to receive that which is absolutely needed. So we'll read a little of the purport to 21. About the last one-third, and there's 2 paragraphs, a little way down the second paragraph, the beginning of the second paragraph is to teach this highest culture, and then a little down. Here, Lord Vamandev, as an ideal brahmachari, refuses Bali Maharaj's offer to give him anything he might want. He says that without contentment, one could not be happy even if he possessed the property of the entire world or the entire universe. In human society, therefore, the Brahminical culture, Kshatriya culture, and Vaishya culture must be maintained, and people must be taught how to be satisfied with only what they need. In modern civilization, there is no such education. Everyone tries to possess more and more, and everyone, we can say, rather than being happy by trying to possess more and more and more, is dissatisfied and unhappy. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore establishing various farms, especially in America, to show how to be happy and content with minimum necessities of life and to save time for self-realization, which one can very easily achieve by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There's much we can comment on that, but we won't right now. We'll just read the final purport that we'll read in 24. If happiness is the ultimate goal of life, one must be satisfied with the position in which he is placed by providence. This instruction is also given by Prahlad Maharaj. Sukamandriyakam daitya deha yogena dehinam savatra labhyate daivad yatadukam ayatnata. My dear friends born of demoniac families, the happiness perceived with reference to the sense objects by contact with the body can be obtained in any form of life according to one's past fruit of activities. Such happiness is automatically obtained without endeavor, just as we obtain distress. This philosophy is perfect in regarding to obtaining happiness. Real happiness is described in the Bhagavad Gita 6:21. Sukham matyantikam yattad buddhigrayam matendriyam vetyatra nachayvayam stitas chalati tatvata. In the spiritually joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. So not to seek happiness on the material level, and the principle is that we can't get more than our karma is anyway, but rather we should use our life to attain spiritual, unbounded, transcendental happiness. And once one has that, one cannot depart from that because that brings us full satisfaction. One has to perceive happiness by the super senses. What are super senses? The super senses are not the senses of the material elements. Every one of us is a spiritual being, aham brahmasmi. and every one of us is an individual person. Our senses are now covered by material elements. In other words, the soul has a spiritual body, and the material body is a covering over the soul. And because of ignorance, we consider the material senses that cover us to be our real senses, as we consider the material body to be ourselves. The real senses, however, are within the material covering, as the real person, the real identity, me, is within the material covering. Within the covering of the material elements are the spiritual senses. When the spiritual senses are uncovered, when the misidentification with the body is removed, by these senses we can be happy in our actual identity. Satisfaction of the spiritual senses is thus described: Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. When the senses are engaged in devotional service to Rishikesh, then the senses are completely satisfied. Without this superior knowledge of sense gratification, one may try to satisfy his material senses, but happiness will never be possible. One may increase his ambition for sense gratification and even achieve what he desires for the gratification of his senses, but because this is on the material platform, he will never achieve satisfaction and contentment. According to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor and should cultivate spiritual consciousness, then he'll be happy. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to spread this understanding. There it is. That we should use everything in the service of Krishna, not just to satisfy my petty, selfish, material desires, because that doesn't bring satisfaction at all. Rather, it brings dissatisfaction, discontent. So people, like you can see that people are, so many people in the third world countries, where they want to go to the first world countries, they want to go to the United States because they're poor and they're thinking that their poverty is the cause of their unhappiness. They want to go to Australia, they want to go here, they want to go there. But are the people in the first world countries satisfied? Is it that they're happy? Rather, they resort to the most peculiar activities in their attempts for happiness. Such deep ignorance, deepening ignorance. And then on the other hand, you see the most peculiar thing in the villages of India, you know, where maybe there is no electricity, especially where there is no electricity, because as soon as there's electricity, there is TV and then computer. Of course, now mobile phones, you can have everything just beamed right in. You don't even need electricity. And everyone needs a mobile phone, or at least one. One time I was on a train coming to Mathura, and it was really late. And there was one sadhu who was getting off. This was just last year, getting off in Mathura too, and the train was stopping before the stop, and suddenly you hear, you know, the ringing of a mobile phone. So he lifts his saffron chadar and he pulls out his mobile phone and he starts talking on the mobile phone. As he's talking, I hear another ring. And then his second mobile phone. So he's talking on one and talking on the other. So I looked at him and I just laughed, and then he thought it was so funny also. He just laughed at me. He said, he put out my hand and he said, "This is so funny, isn't it? How many mobile phones does it take before you're happy?" And actually, as everyone who has a mobile phone knows, you get disturbed so much. Everyone, you want to use it so you can disturb someone else to get what you need, but everyone else is thinking the same thing. And more of them call you to disturb you than you have the opportunity to call them and disturb them. And if you have two, it means your trouble is multiplied. And the computer, and we'll be happy if we have bigger and better heart, and we can get news instantaneous from all over the world at once and hear all everyone's problems and bad news all at once. And we can get television shows on our computer. We're going to make advancements in any movie from anywhere in the world. We can download on our computer, and we're really advanced now, and broadband and super broadband, more faster and more information. And we'll be really happy in that way. But and then in the villages of India, you can see that the people that you can see, we say, oh, the poor. You see them sometimes with rope, and they're pulling up the water in their well. But they're jolly. They don't have anxieties like I do because of my internet connections and there's so many emails every day and this and that and this and that and hearing the and this problem in this part of the world and this problem and then what if happens if they do that and the stock market's going up and it's going down and this and that and no oil and more oil and mad cow disease and mad bird disease and AIDS and this and that and now it's mutating to humans like that. And we'll be really happy if we're aware of all these things all the time. And mobile phones, that the tower is everywhere. And if you live near highways, that it's you're more prone to lung diseases and this and that. And the towers, there was this, in Australia recently, there was a hospital. And now they're admitting, finally, that global warming may be a problem for the world. After the ice caps are melting and everything like that. Yes, we have to admit it. And they just found out that they... unfortunately, I'm admitting that I'm reading all the news and getting the whole world's problem here. But they're just saying that they were paid by the oil companies. Scientists were paid by the oil companies to give biased reports showing that global warming wasn't effective. Like that, as the tobacco companies were previously putting out so everything corrupt, and yes, we're making progress, don't you know that? Artificial hearts and keyhole heart surgery and artificial lungs and artificial kidneys, and yes, we're moving forward, march to the altar of the scientists, and don't worry about a thing. It's crazy. And yet people are miserable. And if you tell them this is crazy, they think you're crazy. If you tell them you don't want to be part of this type of insanity world, they think you're just an escapist or something like that. And what do you think of the people who want to be part of this? They're crazy, actually crazy. And they believe it all. Foolish and crazy. And as Prabhupada, on behalf of Prabhupada, I'll add, rascal. Because of uncontrolled senses, they're addicted to these habits, and they want to change everything, and all the plans to stop the global warming, etc., whatever. They want to keep up the basic principle of sense gratification, not diminish any of that, not diminish any being content with what you have, not act on that principle. But they want to accomplish everything, you know, change the world, but keep up that principle of sense gratification as the purpose of life, and we know that will never work. So just to finish, so the lack of Brahminical culture is actually the problem. Someone to speak honestly about this, and therefore Prabhupada was so strong, defiantly strong, so critical, rascals, this rascal, that rascal. Because he wanted to crack it. The illusion. When the sense, one may increase his ambition for sense gratification and even achieve what he desires for the gratification of his senses. But because this is on the material platform, he will never achieve satisfaction and contentment. And as said in the Bhagavad Gita, without peace or contentment, there is no question of happiness. According to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor and should cultivate spiritual consciousness. Then he will be happy. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to spread this understanding. People who do not have scientific spiritual knowledge mistakenly think that the members of the Krishna consciousness movement are escapists trying to avoid material activities and material responsibilities, I may add. In fact, however, we are engaged in real activities for obtaining the ultimate happiness in life. If one is not trained to satisfy the spiritual senses and continues in material sense gratification, he will never obtain happiness that is eternal and blissful. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore recommends Tapo Divyam Putakayena Satvam Sudye Yajmad Brahmasokyam Tvanantam, that one must purify one's heart by performing austerities or those activities that may be materially uncomfortable to some degree, but are spiritually beneficial. And by doing that, removing all this illusory thoughts that only if I had that, and only if I had 2 cars, or 3 Rolls Royces, or 50 Rolls Royces, or 60 Rolls Royces, then I'll be happy. Removing that by neglect of the mind, purifying the heart, and then when spiritual desires are especially blazing in the heart, then Brahma Sokyam Tvanantam, unending spiritual bliss, happiness. One must practice, Prabhupada concludes this, and we'll conclude the class better late than never. One must practice austerity so that his existential position will be purified and he will achieve unlimited blissful life. Okay, thank you. You're all very tolerant, listening patiently for so long.
And as DBC was telling how, you know, he had a sort of association with Prabhupada, and he was actually kind of brainwashed into never being content unless he was actively moving towards developing a specific title.
Yes.
And you know, he said, I just can't get out of that mindset. And it, you know, actually created a lot of difficulties in his personal life, spiritual life, because it was so extreme.
Well,
you know,
yes.
Okay. Sorry. You want to make the two-word comment?
Because
I'm developing something.
Yeah, I will make a two-word comment. Not now. especially the way you phrased it, I can't answer it in two sentences. We'll go on till 2:30, 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock. You want a two-word answer too?
No, I have
a comment. You can make a comment. Okay, three-word comment. Yes.
I think.
One more word. That. Any other questions? Kal. Kal. Tika. Kal. Tika. That's 3 words. Or is it 2? No, that was all. It's Baba. After 2 o'clock. Huh? Then why don't I end the class, and if you want to ask me, I'll try my best. Unless it's really short.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I think Vamana is between the lines preparing Vani Maharaj for what will happen with him very soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jai.